The Masterclass podcast is made on the unceded land of the Wurundjeri, Woiwurrung and Bunurong people. We recognise First Nations people as the original owners and custodians of the lands and waterways across the Australian continent. We pay our respects to elders past and present. Always was, always will be Aboriginal land.
Wherever I am arriving to interview someone or record anything, the minute I walk into that space, I turn my audio ears on. I often talk about it in quite filmic terms. So think about it in terms of really kind of small close-up sound and also broader, wider sound that sets a scene.
I really like the fact that it creates such a strong visual image.
Pay attention to what is piquing your own interest. If you're going, what? Then someone else is going to go, what? I'm Kirsty Melville. I am a radio broadcaster and documentary maker with the ABC. And in this episode, I'm going to give you a masterclass in working with sound.
Hello, and welcome to season 3 of the Masterclass podcast. I'm Louisa Lim, and I teach audio journalism and podcasting at the University of Melbourne. Every episode, we're talking to a master of journalism to hear about one aspect of their work. Today, we're talking to Kirsty Melville, who produces and makes beautiful radio features for the ABC. She's won several awards, including silver and gold medals at the prestigious New York festivals, and she currently hosts the History Listen on RN. Kirsty, let's talk about sound. I mean, how early in the process do you think about the role of sound in your piece?
Right from the very, very beginning. So pretty much as soon as I've kind of got an idea and I've started to work out who I'm going to be interviewing, I start thinking, first of all, where I'm going to interview them. It's so important because if you think you're going to be interviewing someone, say, talking about a declining state of forests, it's not going to sound very nice to sit and interview them in a studio. You're not going to have any colour. You're not going to have any richness of natural sound. So I'd be thinking, absolutely, you go and record on location so you capture all of that. There are times when you really don't have much choice about where you're going to interview. And so you really do just have to roll with the punches. But as much as you can control the setting, try and think really carefully about what might add to the story and what might add to the sound based on where you record. There are many more things I start thinking about at that point, but that's the very first thing.
Well, tell us about the other things that you're thinking about and, you know, how you sort of keep track of them. What is your process?
First of all, what I would do is, let's just say I'm recording someone out in the bush. Well, I would always turn my recorder on from the minute that I am getting out of my car before I've even gone and said hello. So I capture all of that sort of nuance, you know, that hello, the greetings, maybe your footsteps walking in. And some of that can be a little bit cliche. You've got to be a bit careful about how you use that, but I always get it just in case. Also because you just never know how someone's going to greet you. Sometimes how they greet you and meet you and what they have to say is just super funny or warm or colourful and helps sort of build a picture of who that person is. Or they might say something about the location or the day or the trees or whatever it is. And that's just all that kind of colour that helps build a kind of really rich picture of who they are and where you are. The other thing that I do wherever I am, arriving to interview someone or record anything, the minute I walk into that space, I turn my audio ears on. I'm thinking, okay, there's a fan on, that fridge is really loud, the aircon is on and it's not too loud, but once you turn a mic on and put your headphones on, you'll be surprised how loud it is. There's a lot of traffic going past here. Maybe we can go into a room at the back of the house. So I'm doing that sort of, you know, triaging of the sound right from the minute I walk in the door. One of the things that can be really hard to do when you're starting out is to be assertive about controlling that recording situation. It can be a bit hard to say, look, do you mind if we turn off that aircon? But if you explain to people why, people are fine with it. The next thing I do is before I go out to record anywhere, I always double check my equipment, always check the batteries. if you're recording on your phone, make sure your phone's charged up. Make sure that you've done some test recordings. Work out what sounds best, you know, what distance from your mouth holding the phone works best. You don't want to be interviewing someone with the phone just sitting meters away from you down on a coffee table. You're really going to have to hold it and angle that microphone towards the voice of yourself when you're asking questions and then to your talent. And so it's really worth testing that out at home before you ever record and doing it with someone else. Also, just being really mindful of your handling noise on the phone. It can be a bit sensitive. And if you're kind of moving the phone around in your hands while you're holding it and recording, you can get some really nasty, what we call handling noise, which is a bit of kind of static, and it just ruins an interview. So just have a play around with your equipment before you go out to do any recording.
One thing that I have forgotten to do is checking that I had enough storage space on my phone. So you get there and you're just like deleting videos like crazy.
Yes, all of that stuff. This morning when I, because I'm recording now into my Zoom H6 in this motel room. So just for myself this morning to record this, I had to do this kind of, you know, as I said, my little audio audit. And so what I've done here is I've closed most of the heavy duty curtains. I've turned the little bar fridge off. Have to remember to turn that back on. I've turned the aircon off and I've closed the door to the bathroom and I'm sitting on the bed because even though there's a desk, that desk is all kind of hard surfaces and so you'll get lots of the sound bouncing really harshly off the glass of the window behind it and that harsh wooden desk. So I'm sitting on the bed with lots of pillows around me to kind of help with the sound.
So, I mean, you're in place, your equipment is there. How do you go about starting an audio story? And I think we have an example of the opening of a piece that you did for Earshot called Remember Balgo, about the lack of mental health support services in a remote Aboriginal community. Let's play it and then maybe you can talk a bit about how you put it together.
Balgo with the desert mob. Put your hands to the sky.
Propped up in a dusty corner of Balgo's youth centre are 18 car bonnets, but they're not your usual spare parts. In this footy mad community, home of the legendary Balgo Tigers, each bonnet's been beautifully painted for an AFL team. A striking red and white Indigenous design for my team, the Sydney Swans. Purple and white for the chief artist Gary Nammy's team, the Fremantle Dockers.
But we were worried about the Eagles, the bottom of the ladder. It's sad.
No, it's not sad.
Fremantle goes up, all the way up, so it would have been the final. That's round the corner.
Much like Balgo, these dusty bonnets once held the hope of something greater. It was a project to bring people together after the loss of several young people to suicide in 2019. The community was talking to the AFL about displaying the bonnets at the MCG as part of the Indigenous round. Hopes were high, but then COVID hit.
So, I mean, why did you decide to start the story this way?
Well, look, this was a story that I've been working on for the best part of a year. It just in my mind, really, I hadn't done any recording. I was really unsure how to broach some of the really tough issues that were going on in community without, I guess, throwing the community under the bus. I sort of trying to show that there was such a richness and strength to the community and that many of the problems were born of, you know, many years of trauma. It's always hard when you're doing a story that's going to be tackling really hard and tough issues to keep people listening past the first few minutes because people might not be in the mood to hear something tough. You know, they might think, oh, they've heard this before. So I thought really hard about how I could capture people in those first few minutes. And one of the stories that had really stuck with me for my first few weeks in community was the story of these car bonnets. And they're so cool. They are just gorgeous. And I couldn't believe that nothing had happened with them. And it did just, as I thought about it, as I said in that intro, It really just seemed so symbolic of this community that has got so much richness and cultural history and art and so many wonderful things that people never hear about because they get so forgotten about because they're so remote. And the car bonnets just absolutely illustrated that. And it was one of the things I found that I was telling people back home in Perth about. I kept saying, oh, you should see these bonnets. They're so awesome. And there was talk that they were going to be displayed on the MCG and then all these things happened. I guess what I often do when I'm working on a story is that I start paying very close attention to what I'm telling people about the story I'm working on. And that usually ends up forming my intro because I realised if that's what I'm telling my friends over coffee, then that's the thing that I'm finding the most interesting. So, you know, rather than trying to get so caught up in the worthiness of the story or big words or making it this and that, it's really about engagement. It's about keeping people listening. And what is it that you're going to put at the very top where people are going to go, okay, this is not just your ordinary story. It's got a bit of colour. Oh, I'm a bit intrigued by that. Where's this going to go next?
I really like the fact that it creates such a strong visual image as well. But it's also, there's a lot of sound in that opening, isn't there?
There is. So for starters, I had been trying to get that guy Gary on tape for months. And finally, I found him and I got him and I was sitting there and then the youth centre started blasting all of this music and I'm just like, oh no, it's just my worst case scenario. Anyway, you kind of, it's disguised a bit by having that track. It's part of the reason why I ran that track so long underneath that opening because there was just this like, you know, full on, you know, hip hop coming from the youth centre right next to where we were sitting. Anyway, it was a challenging environment. And then also, you know, later on, many of the other interviews I recorded, I'd be sitting there recording and then a fight would start. And so you'd be hearing all this screaming and I'd just be, do I keep recording? And I thought, well, this is the story. This is it. And I just, you know, it was far enough in the background that it was just background noise. But if you listen to that piece, you can hear it through many of the interviews. You know, the cars screeching and people and things, you know, clanging and people hitting tin against tin. And it was a very intense recording environment. And then there's obviously that track, that music. And that was a project that a hip hop group had come into community years ago and worked with the young kids. And they'd written that track and recorded it and made a music video. And it was just, it's just gorgeous. The whole track is awesome, actually. It just brings the story to life, I think.
So when you're working on a story, say you're working on a relatively short story, how do you go about structuring the story and deciding how many clips to use and what clips to use?
What I do for longer stories, but what I would especially do for shorter pieces is do a sort of a dot point map of how you want your story to pan out. And obviously you are not going to know exactly what your interviewees are going to say, but from doing what we call pre-interviews, where you might have a chat with them on the phone, work out that they're a great talker, work out that they're the one that is going to best be able to speak to you about this topic, you get a fair sense of what they're going to say. You get a fair sense of what person A is going to say, what person B is going to say. You've got a fairly clear idea what the point of your story is. And so for a really short piece, you just need to be very clear about what that is and think really carefully about how to frame the questions you ask to get what you want. I always prefer to have the option of having an answer stand alone without my question in it. So then I think really carefully about how I frame a question so that the talent will start the answer. So it's a complete answer. You sometimes have to stop and coach people to do that. And again, it's part of building that confidence about having that sort of control of an interview where you stop and say, look, would you mind just saying, you know, I think the best way of approaching this is blah, not just, well, do this, because then that doesn't make any sense if it's just standing alone as an answer. It's also when you're thinking about sound at that stage, I often talk about it in quite filmic terms of wide shots and close-ups. And it sounds, that's really basic, but essentially what you want to do is record, if you're in the bush, you want to just stand there and record several minutes really, if you're just holding that microphone in, or phone, whatever you're recording on, really still and just recording just a general atmos of the bush. Then start thinking, well, what are some of the close-up sounds that might work as spot sound effects? So maybe there's some beautiful birds that you can get up close to. Maybe there's a creek where you can go and put your microphone right up close and record that. Maybe you record your feet crunching on the leaves. Maybe you record, you know, your body hitting twigs and snapping off a tree. So think about it in terms of really kind of small close-up sound and also broader, wider sound that sets a scene. On top of that, wherever you record, always, always record a minute or two of room noise. Everywhere you sit to record an interview, record another minute of absolute silence, no one talking, so that you've got that as a backup for your editing. I use that all the time. Even when there's not a dramatic background sound, I use that to soften the edit coming out of a person into my studio recorded script.
Do you ever use sound effects from online libraries in your pieces?
Yeah, I do sometimes, but I audition quite a lot of them. A lot of the online sound library sound effects are just really a bit in your face and a bit over-egged. You want something that sounds a bit more natural. And also, I think sometimes when you use those kind of sound effects, they can just sound a little bit cliched and a bit forced in a story. So always just kind of think, why am I using this sound? Is it really adding to the story? Is it really necessary? You know, we don't want to hear a door slam every time you talk about getting out of a car. We don't want to hear footsteps every time you're talking about walking somewhere. Like, you just use them judiciously. And if you are listening and thinking and cringing a little bit inside, thinking, oh, I don't know about that, then take it out. There's nothing worse than hearing a story that's mapped out in really obvious sound effects.
How do you think about the role of music in your work?
I use music in almost everything that I do, some more often than others. You only want to be using music if it's really adding to your story. You don't want to be using music just for music's sake. You'll always be able to tell if you've just whacked it in there because you think you should, rather than because it adds something. Having said that, it can be just such a gift for setting a mood or adding character to a story, or also just as a real turning point to signify a shift in mood or a shift in location or a turn in the direction of the narration of the story. There was a story I did last year, for instance, on a friend of a friend who was an alcoholic, and we did all the interviews just sitting in my lounge room about her alcohol addiction, and there were just no opportunities to work with sound. We couldn't involve her children, for instance. We couldn't record in her home because it was too noisy. So I had to rely very heavily on music, and I had to be very careful because you don't want anything that's too prescriptive that's going to tell people how to feel. So I've got some really strong feelings about music, and I would say really stay away from using cliched music. You don't want to be using music that's too literal. So it's just, you know, again, what I said before about going with your gut on this, if you're having a little cringe or you're not sure about it, then drop it.
I wanted to ask you about how often you use that kind of device where you're narrating what is happening. I think we have an example of where you do this from your Walkley Award-winning story for Earshot, The Ghosts of Wittenoom, which is about the legacy of asbestos mining in a remote Western Australian Aboriginal community.
And yet, despite all the death and all the collective knowledge about the danger of asbestos, here it still sits, more than 50 years later.
Wow, stop, stop.
We stop. And there are mounds of asbestos all around us.
Oh, that's just...
There are tire tracks and footprints all through them. People have been walking through this.
That is just phenomenal to see.
The government's key strategy in dealing with the asbestos tailings dumps has been community education. If you tell everyone how dangerous it is and put up warning signs, then hopefully people will stay away.
You sound genuinely surprised at coming across these mounds of asbestos. Did you know that's what you were driving into?
I'd seen photos, but I was genuinely shocked because there's just nothing like seeing something like that in real life. And at the time I was thinking, I just don't know if I'll ever be able to use this recording because I'm about to go into a prohibited area and I don't know if that's going to be okay or not to use the recording to admit that I'd been in there. We did everything that you're supposed to do. We didn't get out of the car. We closed our air vents into the car. We kept our windows up and we just communicated through these CB radio, which you can hear the recording of. And I did just talk my way around it in case I did end up being able to use it because it was genuinely shocking. For starters, there were so many people in there swimming, camping. There was a couple of, you know, campers set up maybe a kilometre from where all these huge piles of asbestos were. And as you hear me say, there's footsteps in this stuff, like in this blue-grey dust. People have gotten out and walked around in it. And it was mind-blowing. And when I came back and started working with that audio, I just thought, I absolutely have to use this. I have to use it. It is so powerful to hear someone reacting for the first time to something so shocking in a way that you can't then make up in your own words. You know, just if I'd written a script about that, it just wouldn't have sounded the same, really.
Tell us about your editing workflow. How do you go about editing a story?
Well, I should start by saying that everyone does this completely differently. And I don't know if my way is the best way, but this is my way. So I will always just dump everything into my editing software. And then I listen through to absolutely everything. And on that first listen, I divide the interviews up and I label them with, it might be, say, John intro, John childhood, John talking about the forest. If I'm doing a shorter piece though, I would go through and just pull out the really strong, strong bits. And so then I start to get some kind of structure and then I start layering in sound and music. I actually start putting sound and music in quite early on in the process. Not everyone does that, but for me, I need to hear how it's going to sit, how it's going to sound. And sometimes a bit of interview that you think might be a bit flat, once you put a bit of music and a bit of sound under it, it just lifts it so much. And I need to hear if that's going to happen. So I do start working with sound and music actually quite early.
I wondered if you could give us two top tips for students in creating a beautiful audio feature.
Well, it would be hard to go past just capturing a really great recording. It is such an important thing. You could have like the best story in the world and if it's recorded 2 or 3 meters away and you can't hear what someone's saying, you can't use it. So getting that great recording and being curious about your surroundings, about the person that you're recording. Pay attention to what is piquing your own interest. If you're going, what? Then someone else is going to go, what? So just be curious. Don't just stick to like a strict list of questions. Be open.
That's such good advice. And do you have a task for our students?
I would like you to go and record and narrate a 45-second-ish description of moving from one location to another. So you could be moving, say, from inside to outside or from one room to another, from an outdoor market to the street. You could be moving from a shop to a mall, whatever. But just take us through what you're seeing and what you're smelling and what you're hearing. And it really just should evoke a feeling in the listener and give the listener a really clear sense of where you are.
That was Kirsty Melville, a radio host and documentary maker with the ABC. The Masterclass is produced by Dylan Bird and myself. It's edited by Dylan Bird. Sound design and post-production by John Jia. The original concept is by Anders Furs. The theme tune is by Susie Wilkins. It was partially funded by the GEM Scott Trust. And it's all brought to you by the Centre for Advancing Journalism at the University of Melbourne.